Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films, 3,000 Years of Longing, Hypochondriac, and 3 Minutes, A Lengthening.
These movies are really, each one, they're all very different from one another. So it'll be sort of fun to talk about them. So let us begin with 3,000 Years of Longing. This is a movie that's getting a lot of play, a lot of publicity, a lot of buzz nowadays. It was directed by George Miller, who is best known for, he's an Australian filmmaker, but he's best known for Mad Max movies. Big spectacle action films. And 3,000 Years of Longing has quite a lot of spectacle in it, although I wouldn't exactly call it an action film. Anyway, it has a lustrous cast, namely two people who are very different kinds of actors but are both quite wonderful in their ways. Tilda Swinton plays the main character of the movie, who is a woman who is a scholar. And Tilda Swinton, I always say this, she can do anything. She's a fabulous performer, and I just love her work. She's wonderful. And the other main character is played by Idris Elba, a very, very different kind of performer, probably still best known now from playing a very important character on The Wire many years ago. But he's done a whole lot of other things along the way, and he's a very, very gifted performer. So we have these two as our main characters. Tilda Swinton plays a woman named Alethea, and she is a scholar. And she is a scholar of not just literature, but literature and myth and narratives of all kinds. In fact, technically, she is a narratologist, because she studies stories of all different kinds. She's very interested in myth and whatnot. So she is going off to a conference, and she gets to the conference, and weird things start to happen. A weird little man comes up and starts to almost take away her luggage from her in the airport when she lands. By the way, that's never really explained, but weird things start to happen. But then here's what happens. She has come upon a little bottle. And at one point, she opens up this little bottle, and what comes out but, well, what we used to call when I was a kid, a genie, like out of the Arabian Nights. Here in this movie, it's a more proper term that's used, a djinn, and this is the character played by Idris Elba. And he is a classical djinn from the old stories. He is going to grant her 3 wishes. So these two, and by the way, a very large amount of this movie takes place in Alethea's hotel room where these two talk with each other. But there it is. She's let the genie out of the bottle. He turns out to be a good genie, and he wants to give her these 3 wishes. And in fact, after a while, when she doesn't really want to make wishes, he insists she's got to make the wishes. So it turns sort of coercive like this. The reason she is reluctant to make wishes is that she is familiar enough with myths and legends and old stories to know that it always turns out to be a trick. There always turns out to be something that goes wrong, and the 3 wishes end up either not amounting to anything or having unforeseen consequences that are very bad. She doesn't want to make the 3 wishes, but the djinn insists that she makes the 3 wishes. So, as I said, a lot of this movie takes place in her hotel room and his conversations between the two of them and flashbacks to the djinn's earlier life. And we learn about his earlier periods of captivity in bottles. And boy, they are long periods. One of them lasted for 2,500 years. So, boy, that's a lot of time to spend in a bottle with nothing to do. And he talks about what that ordeal was like for him and so forth. And along the way, they get to know each other very well, and they get develop a real relationship between the two of them, the scholar of storytelling and the djinn with all the magical powers and supernatural abilities and whatnot. So that's what the movie is about. And it does have a great deal of spectacle in it. A lot of these flashbacks take us to exotic parts of the world where we see exotic experiences that the djinn had long ago. But I got to stress one more time how much of this takes place in the hotel room. And is the two of these people talking to each other or the djinn narrating a story of one of his periods of captivity and freedom and then captivity again and so forth and so on. So how is 3,000 Years of Longing as a movie? Well, I would have to say sort of so-so. It struck me as a very large amount of ado about really not very much at all. Inside itself, this movie doesn't have, I think, much substance. It's full of mythical references and all kinds of exotic locations and whatnot, but it never really grabbed hold of me. I didn't feel much emotional resonance to it, even though it's supposed to be about longing and love and freedom and captivity. It never really touched me, and it never really touched my heart very much. And I can't say it touched my mind very much either. It's not all that intelligent a movie. It's just sort of an exotic movie. So I think it's a lot of people are liking it. It's getting, selling a lot of tickets, and that's fine with me. It's not a bad movie. It's just not a movie I could get very excited about. 3,000 Years of Longing did not, I will say, create very much longing in me. I'm glad I saw it, but I don't think I'll be watching it again anytime soon. So in that case, let's change the subject and go to a very different kind of movie, Hypochondriac. This is a movie written and directed by a new filmmaker named Addison Heiman, and it is a horror movie, but it also is also very much a psychological drama, or maybe I should say a psychological melodrama, and it has a number of very unusual characteristics. I don't think it's a great horror movie. I don't think it's a great psychological melodrama, but it has enough unusual about it to sort of keep my interest all the time. If you like horror movies or psychological melodramas, you certainly shouldn't miss it. So, one very unusual thing about it is that the two main characters of it are young gay men. And of course, we're seeing a lot more gay characters in the movies after decades and decades where you could not have gay characters in movies, at least not characters who are obviously gay. The movies are making up for lost time, and I'm very glad of that. And in this movie, that is very much front and center. Our young main character's name is Will, and the other really main character is his boyfriend, a guy named Luke. And we see their relationship, and we see how they really love each other, and they really are just a fine, splendid young couple of men. Will, our main character, is a potter, and he works for a high-end pottery. So he creates very nice bespoke sort of items of pottery, and that's what he does for a living. Now, the movie is called Hypochondriac, and it starts right off with the very first scene is a panic attack. So we know what kind of a movie we're in for here. In fact, the panic attack is not being had by Will. It's being had by one of his co-workers at the pottery. But he reveals then that he himself has had many a panic attack in his time. And so we start off the movie on what we might call a note of high anxiety. The movie moves on from there. Will starts to get symptoms, and we very early in the movie see reenacted a part of his childhood, which is really horrible. If this really happened, and that's a little bit ambiguous, but probably it did, his mother was very, very mentally ill, probably bipolar, and at one point she had a terrible episode and actually tried to kill him when he was about 12 years old. And we see this. We see her strangling him in his bed, and it's a horrible thing. He survives, obviously, because he is the main character of the movie we're watching, but it's a horrible thing. And now, as a young adult with a very happy relationship with his boyfriend and a good job with a high-end pottery and all of that, he starts to have symptoms. Something is really wrong with him. Something is wrong, especially with his hands and his arms, which he needs very much, being a potter and all. And he goes to see physicians, and they usually give him advice, which is really bad. One of the funny little things that this movie has, which is sort of a little theme that runs through it, is he goes off and he sees these MDs who tell him things that really are no help at all. Oh, it's stress. It'll be better in 2 weeks. Rest a little bit, stuff like that. And in the meanwhile, things are getting worse and worse and worse. And then, of course, we start to suspect, as does he, maybe this is all sort of, I'm not going to say hypochondria, but maybe it is psychosomatic. Maybe these traumas from his past life are now manifesting themselves on his body. Well, things get worse and worse. His psychological state gets worse and worse. He remembers more of the horrible things that happened to him in his earlier life. He remembers more and more things about his mother's insanity. And then his mother resurfaces. We find out that he has been completely removed from her for something like 10 years. He's always told his boyfriend Luke that she died a long time ago, but she's alive, and she's now leaving messages on his cell phone. And one of the things those messages are saying is, look out for your boyfriend Luke. He's evil. He's out to get you. He's going to kill you. So is the mother even real? Is she still alive? Is that really her leaving these messages on the cell phone? If that's the case, is Luke really evil, or is this all sort of something that's come out of her insanity, or maybe Will's insanity? It's that sort of movie where there's a lot of ambiguity about what's real and what isn't. What does appear to be very real are that Will's symptoms are getting worse and worse. But then again, are they real illness? Are they hypochondria? Is there a difference between real illness and hypochondria, et cetera, et cetera? So this is a movie with really a lot on its mind, a lot of very serious things on its mind. It has dream sequences. It has nightmare sequences. It has what appear to be past life memories that are traumatic and horrible that we see on the screen. It is a horror movie. I found it a very interesting movie, partly because of these ambiguities between what's real and what isn't real. And I really enjoyed watching it, even though a lot of the material in it is pretty horrible. And I will warn everybody that there are a couple of really bloody scenes in it. So I think it's not a great horror movie and not a great psychological melodrama, but it's a good one in those categories. Well made, reasonably well acted, and if this is the sort of thing you like, you'll have a good time with it. Our last movie this week, Jill, has a very odd title, 3 Minutes, A Lengthening, and that's really very much what it turns out to be. This is all about a little 3 minute long movie. The movie is, of course, a lot longer than that. The subtitle of this movie is A Lengthening, and that's what this movie does, is it lengthens that three-minute movie. Way back in the late 1930s, a young man named David Kurtz was traveling, taking a vacation in a Jewish town in Poland, taking home movies on 16-millimeter film, color film. It looks very nice. So years and years and years later, after the Holocaust, recently, the grandson of that young man, named David Kurtz, finds this film and looks at it and is absolutely fascinated by it, because it is the one remaining record of this Jewish town in Poland where virtually every single Jew in the town, not long after this three-minute home movie was made, was either killed or sent off to Treblinka, sent off to death camp. So that is what this movie is. It is a feature-length examination of this little three-minute home movie made in a town that was full of Jews, made by a Jewish person on vacation, and remembering now how virtually every Jewish resident of that town was either killed there or sent off to a death camp and killed there. So that's what this movie is. It is a documentary about this little three-minute home movie. Now, this is obviously a movie for cinephiles, for people who love movies, because it's a movie all about a movie, and it's absolutely fascinating on that level. But much more important than that, it is a movie about the Holocaust. It is a movie about the horrors of the Holocaust. It is a movie about anti-Semitism, which, by the way, still very much exists in the world. It's a movie about all of those things, and it's very lovingly made, and it's very lovingly told. The narrator of the film is Helena Bonham Carter, and she fills us in with a lot of information about the background against which this little three-minute home movie was made, about the things that happened to the people in that town. It was a lovely town, by the way, from all appearances. But mainly we have this examination of the film itself. We see the film more than once while we hear narration and while we hear facts about the making of it and about the circumstances against which it was made. The film footage is slowed down. The filmmakers of the film now, by the way, it was directed by Bianca Stigter, zoom in on details within the frame so that we zoom into this three-minute movie and we see little bits and pieces, and they are held on the screen as freeze frames, and we get to examine this film in enormous length. In a way, what happens to this three-minute home movie is rather like what happened with the famous Zapruder film of John F. Kennedy's assassination. The way that film was studied and gone, of that film, of course, was much shorter, and frozen and looked at forwards and backwards and examined and put into slow motion, all to get the smallest little details out of it. And that's kind of what happens here. We get the details of this movie, and above all, we get the remembrances of the Holocaust and what a lovely, lovely town this was, with lovely, lovely people in it, and now they are all gone, and they were all gone almost immediately after this little movie was made, way back in 1938. There are attempts to identify the people, by the way, in this little three-minute home movie, and that is very moving, because a lot of them are identifiable, and we find out who they were, and their memories are now resurrected in our own time. Whenever I talk about a Holocaust film, I remember my good friend, the critic Stuart Kluwans, who once somebody said to him when another Holocaust movie came out, how many Holocaust movies do we need? And Stewart said, well, maybe one answer to that might be 6 million. I think there will never be an end for more movies to help us understand the horrors of the Holocaust. And 3 minutes a lengthening is one of the best I've seen in a very long time. And that is my, in some ways, horrifying story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you very much. David Sterrett, Films in Focus. The films 3,000 Years of Longing, Hypochondriac, and 3 minutes a lengthening.